Before we get into talking about Survivor finale feedback with Ali Lasher, I want to take a moment and thank a sponsor for this episode of the podcast, also friends over at Bet Online. With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think that there's nothing to bet on. Well, you would be wrong. Our exclusive partner, Bet Online, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on, from their online casino to poker and blackjack, as they are bringing the Vegas to you. If you're missing the NFL, no problem. Bet Online has live daily NFL 20 simulations that you can wager on. If you're into entertainment betting, you can still bet on American Idol, stock prices, or even the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. It's all open 24 hours a day and all online. Visit the website or use your mobile device and join today to receive your new welcome bonus. Bet Online, your online wagering solution. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner, Podcast One, Bet Online, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code Podcast One for your sign up bonus. Visit betonline.ag and don't forget that promo code Podcast One for your sign up bonus. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast, and now here's the guy with better microphones than the Survivor finale. I am Rob's sister, Nino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast to talk about the finale, answer your feedback, and talk about much more here today. And I'm very excited to have back with me on the podcast. We did not get to talk Survivor since the preseason draft or the preseason preview of a bunch of the new school players who ended up being very prominent in season 40, Survivor Winners at War. You can hear this woman as co-host of our reality TV wrap-ups coverage of The Challenge. Here is the great Ali Lasher.
I feel like you're expecting me to do my usual shtick. That, I mean, it's not shtick, but like that I don't deserve to be here. I mean, even the great Mike Bloom and Shannon were saying they questioned why they were here. But au contraire, mon frère, I think this is the first time, Rob, that we've ever spoken that this is actually the perfect spot for me right now.
Yes. To talk about all of your fellow New Jersey residents who have made it to the Survivor Final Three?
See, I was more thinking, like, this is a podcast that's after the season. Who cares about it? We just
watched the
most chaotic person to ever be on the show win a second time. The first person voted out of the show came in second place. There was no reunion because we're in a pandemic. Why not call in More chaos about this episode.
Good. Well, I'm happy you're here to help talk this through with me about everything that's going on. I'm glad that we do not have an airing of the grievances to open things up. Shout out to the late, great Jerry Stiller, who passed away this week. But I'm very excited that we can jump into talking about this finale.
Yeah, I went back, and I told you this before we got on, but I went back and listened to some of my yapping from before the season, and I quoted Jerry Stiller in the preseason also, so now we're really full circle.
Yes, which, what was the quote about, this is not my type of guy?
Yes, wow. Is that, have you also listened to that recently, or?
Yeah, I forget exactly. You know, I think I heard you, I remember the quote from there, and I remember you from then on. I think maybe you talked about that on 32 Fans also. So it's stuck in my memory.
I'm worried about you. Is someone checking in with you?
No one is. That's funny you should ask. But I'm laughing also as we're coming on to record this podcast. So I did exit interviews with the final six. I found out earlier on this week I was going to do interviews with the top three, and then I didn't think I was getting 4, 5, 6 today. I thought I was going to maybe do them down the road, but it turns out that we got all of the top six, and that was, I felt like a really fun podcast for me to get to record earlier today. So you can check that out in your podcast feed. And spoiler alert, we're definitely going to probably talk about things that came up in those conversations. But in the software that we use to record these calls, Allie typed in her name as Cat Daddy Love, which a reference to how Tony came on the call with me today, which is funny for several different reasons. Let me just play. Here is Tony coming on the call with me today.
Without further ado, it is my great pleasure to throw it to my interview with the champ, Tony Vlachos.
What's going on, Cat Daddy Love?
Is this the two-time King of Survivor, Tony Vlachos?
Say it again.
Okay, so that really did stand out to me. And Cat Daddy Love, why? I don't know why Tony called me that today. But Allie, as I was saying, that I it sounded familiar. This is not the first time that Tony has called me Cat Daddy Love. And I go back to my exit interview with Tony from May 22nd, 2014, almost 6 years ago. Here is me going to my exit interview with Tony following his win in Cagayan.
Now, and let's bring in the man who is the winner of Survivor Cagayan. Here he is. It's Tony. Tony, are you there?
What's going on, Cat Daddy Love?
What kind of voice is that, Tony?
That's a mixture between a human and a llama. What's going on, Cat Daddy?
There you go. Tony.
Am I Cat Daddy Love? Does the llama voice call everybody Cat Daddy Love?
I think you need to speak with the other Survivor press and ask if they also get the same greeting. Or because what's so great about it is you're Rockin' Rob, which is already an A-plus nickname, but we've buried the lead on the real A++ nickname that you've had secretly this whole time.
What's going on, Allie?
Can I ask something? Do you know what I'm about to ask?
No.
Can you do a Russell Hantz version of Cat Daddy Love?
Swedish Cat Daddy Love? No, I don't think so.
I feel like who had 6 minutes for this whole podcast to fall apart?
What's going on? No, I can't do it. I can only do regular Cat Daddy Love. So I'm very excited to be bringing the character of Cat Daddy Love. I have to go back and check the Game Changers exit interview to see if I was Cat Daddy Love in that exit interview as well. But maybe that's only a celebratory character.
Yeah, I feel like that's Cat Daddy Love only comes out when Tony's in his winner form.
Yeah, okay.
That's not just everyday use.
Allie, Tony Vlachos, that it was a thing that we were blindsided by. So many of us did not see this coming until only like a couple of weeks ago when it started to become really, really like headlights coming careening down the freeway at us that Tony was going to win this thing. What's your reaction to Tony as the two-time now King of Survivor?
Woo-woo! I mean, what is anyone's reaction to Tony being the two-time winner of Survivor? Complete disbelief. I mean, who had this? People like, oh, I had this. No one had this with any real confidence. I mean, it's insane that he is the winner. It is perfect that he is the winner. People have been low on the season, I feel like. You know, Josh Wigler was talking about the rankings. Everyone talks about the rankings going into this. I'm easy to please. I feel like for me, this has been a top five season before Tony is the winner.
Yeah.
Top five, baby. And then we indulged in this reunion. Like, we had the longest reunion ever. It was, I agree with you, the best reunion we've ever had. Not the reunion, the finale. I was reunited with the finale. It was a reunion of me and the cast.
Yes.
And it was incredible. So just, it's the cherry on top. Of what has already been such an crazy. It was an crazy season. It was incredible. It was crazy. I loved it. I just don't know what more you want from Tony. And I was surprised by it because even when it looked like it was Tony's coronation in the last few weeks, I didn't buy it because I was like, there's no way season 40 is going to be start. You know, he peaked too soon. We have Tony full Tony episodes like 3 or 4 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I'm like, there's no way that this is just going to be that obvious of a stroll to the final for him. And then once Natalie came back, I was like, I see what's happening here. Because now it makes sense, right? We have Tony with the highest possible highs. Then we get to the reunion and the finale. Mm-hmm. And he has, I'm just trolling everyone that there wasn't a reunion.
Yeah.
You get to the finale and it's the lowest of lows for Tony in terms of his vulnerability in the game, despite still not getting a vote. And that's when he shoots back up to like the rightful winner is crowned. So I'm here for the Tony story. And I want to see Tony on Senior Survivor when he's 70.
Yeah. No, I do think that the Chris Underwood win, and I talked about this a little bit with Steven last night, you know, set this up in a lot of ways in terms of for the players, in terms of, you know, an outcome that they wanted versus one that they didn't. What Natalie probably needed to do, which she could not exactly deliver, what Chris Underwood was able to deliver. But I think in our expectations as a viewer that it was like, oh, no. Oh, wait, it's happening. It's happening again. The edge person is going to win. And Tony is about to be robbed. And in the end, he wasn't. And I think that that is another thing that added to it being a very satisfying win if you are a fan of Team TV.
So can I ask you with that? So I think, and all of the Never Edgers should be thrilled, because I think if you have to send yourself into fire, and I know that not everybody has to do it, right? But this happened with, you know, Dom didn't send himself into fire. Like, I think the fire challenge is broken if you have to send yourself in to win. And I know that hasn't exactly, that's not exactly the rule yet, because it's more the rule against an edge, mm-hmm. the edge person has to do it. But I still think you should not have to send yourself in to fire. Like, the fact that winning out, winning that Final Four immunity challenge is looked at less favorably than going to fire, I think is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that Natalie sold it well enough, but I think that that shouldn't make the difference, and we can talk more about it. But I do wonder if, so you think if Natalie beats Tony in fire, she hands down wins against Sarah?
I think so. I think that there's probably like a couple of people, like it seems like that Rob and Amber seems like that they swing over, that gets her to at least six. So I think that she's looking pretty, and again, Tony's gone at that point, right? Because she has beat Tony to knock him out. So I think that that's actually a very interesting scenario with, you know, how many votes does Sarah end up getting? You know, Sarah has a lot of people. I think she probably ends up losing to Sarah, but I think it's probably like very close where it's like, you know, close to, you know, 8-8.
See, I think she loses to Sarah too. And that's why I don't think, like, that's why I think it's kind of BS that when Boston Rob casts his vote, he's like voting against Natalie as opposed to for Tony. Like, I think Boston Rob votes for Tony. You know, if Tony won immunity and Natalie took out Sarah, so I don't know, whatever. Like, I know that's not exactly what Boston Rob was saying, but measuring Natalie's game by what Rob would have done, well, guess what, Rob, you're not in the seat. So I was frustrated by that, but I think ultimately it would be almost insane for Natalie to make fire against Tony. It's a totally different situation than Chris Underwood was in. And so I think it's I get it that it was fresh in their minds. They all just saw it. I like that they spoke about having just seen it. I think that was interesting to like be referential to the previous season. But I think it's an unfair metric. And if that's going to be the metric moving forward with fire generally, then I think it's broken, even though everyone already hates it.
So I don't know that. In terms of like the fire, I wonder, like, have we gotten so used to it that I didn't see anybody talking about today that if there is no fire, if there is basically a regular vote, like, is Tony voted out here? Or do you think that Cops or Us sticks together and then we ultimately have the traditional 2-2 fire making?
I don't see a world where Sarah turns against Tony.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Tony knows rightly that he could beat Sarah with the jury.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see them turning, because I also think they both think they could beat both Michelle and Natalie at fire.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they would stick strong.
Yeah.
I think maybe Natalie would flip on, or maybe not. I mean, maybe she could fire. I don't know. But
yeah.
I so I just don't think you should have to remove the necklace that you earned in, like, part of Survivor are challenges, just like I think part of Survivor is this fire challenge. And if you've won the necklace, like, that should be looked at favorably. Natalie yeah. won when she needed to win, and it's crazy that she would have to give up her necklace in order to earn a vote. Not crazy, but it's frustrating, right? Like, it's like she won. She controlled all of their fate. She made all of the calls. And so I would have voted for Toni also, but not because she didn't take off her necklace and went to fire and didn't go to fire.
It, just to talk it through, if it was this 2-2 vote, because I do feel like that Sarah and Toni would probably stick together. So it looks like that Sarah and Toni, they vote together. They have to vote for Michelle because Natalie is immune. And then Natalie and Michelle are probably going to vote for Toni. So we end up getting a Toni versus Michelle fire making in that scenario if it ends up being the 2-2 tie. And Sarah talked to me in the conversation that we had today of that she actually really liked her chances potentially in a matchup of that if it's Toni, Sarah, and Natalie, that she feels like that maybe she would outflank Toni for votes and then Natalie would end up taking other votes away, and that she felt pretty good about that scenario of her, Toni, and Natalie sitting in the final three. So I think that she probably would end up voting with Toni for it to force Toni into the 2-2 tie.
So what's interesting about that, okay, so in that case, nothing's different because Natalie still wins Final Four immunity. So
yeah.
I think she still gets the four votes. I don't think any of those four would flip to Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
So
she would get Michelle, I think, also.
Interesting.
Michelle, I think that Michelle would vote for Natalie.
Oh, Michelle would vote for Natalie.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I don't know. So I think, I mean, but then Michelle said in her exit press that they wanted Toni to win, that like she wanted Toni to win.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that she necessarily votes for Natalie, right? Like, so I think those four would definitely vote for Natalie. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Michelle leans Natalie, but I think it's at least 50-50.
Yeah.
I mean, that's interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So as we're working all of this through, let's come back to your thoughts about Toni from way back when, because back when this season was being filmed, you participated in a preseason draft with Liana Boris and Mike Bloom and Akiva Winokur, and it came down to the 20th pick in the draft. We talked about this a little bit with Akiva the other day on This Week in Survivor, and 19 survivors had been drafted. Toni Vlachos, the winner of the season, remained as the 20th person left, the one person undrafted. And there was some talk about just should anybody even take Toni, because that you had a -3 for being the first off. And you were probably, even though it was Liana's pick to get Toni, maybe the most optimistic about Toni on that draft all the way back in June of 2019. Let's go back to the RHAP season 40 preseason draft.
Well, let's talk about the Mary Poppins of this cast in Toni Vlachos. So, Allie, I'm super intrigued. What do you think Toni's chances are legitimately of either going far or getting a lot of airtime?
I mean, I would certainly take Toni over the field, like over whoever else. Like, I get that he's also an easy first boot, but I don't think he's making the merge, but I don't think he's getting booted first. Like, I don't know what Toni's been up to, but I think him kind of like flaming out so spectacularly when he came back is going to like lessen his threat potential. Like, I wonder if he hasn't transformed from, like, big threat who won this crazy game, who, like, can't be trusted and is volatile, to, like, clown. And if he's a clown, then he's, like, way less of a threat. And I think he's got just as much of a confessional content point upside as Boston Rob. Like, I think they're going to, even if he's only on 2 episodes, like, I think he's getting 5 confessionals both episodes.
This is all good stuff. Let's stay with this. I want to get into the next point that Mike brings up also.
Maybe I'm too high on him, but like I was like showing my friend and he was like, oh, isn't that the guy who like buried himself? You know, like we've already moved past the spy shack to the spy bunker. Like he's like more memorable for maybe being the clown than he was like the dominant game winner.
Yeah. Does he double down on the spy shack? Spy bunker nonsense?
100%. I think so.
So, Allie, you were higher than most, and you felt like that maybe what was Game Changers exactly what Tony needed to get a little further in this game. You still didn't have him making the merge, but I think that on this panel that you were the closest to calling how this was going to go for Tony.
Yeah, I was told this was going to be like, oh, we're going to air how great you were, but really this was just a way to air Mike calling the spy nest.
Well, it was both things. It was both things.
I forgot about that comment my friend made about Barrett. Isn't that the guy who buried himself? That was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, call me baby cakes. I mean, I support Tony. Like, I think...
Look, is that going to be in the final wand off?
Call me baby cakes?
Yeah.
Here's what I think none of us could have predicted, right? Like, I do think he had, he learned a lot probably from losing so spectacularly in Game Changers. That's like an ego check that I think is important. I also think it definitely helped him reputationally, like, water down the perception of Tony. But what we could not have accounted for, which I'll call the Mr. X Factor, mm-hmm. I just love referencing Mike Bloom's alias,
mm-hmm.
is baby cakes. It's what he said to in the interview. It's what he said previously. Like, his wife told him he's got to be patient. Do you want, this was so great. Do you want to look how you looked in Game Changers? No. Okay, if no, then you have to be different. So I think it was less so the lack of threat level from Game Changers, but how Tony felt internally about losing on Game Changers,
wow.
that he didn't want to do that again. So I think that helped cage the bird.
Yes. Yes. But then did she spring him? Did she come back when she came to the family visit and whisper in his ear, it's go time, Tony?
Here's what's so amazing about Tony. And this is what I think differentiates Sarah and Tony, right? I think Sarah, honestly, going into the finale, I was like, wow, Sarah is a top five. Everyone's top five to me, but a top Survivor player. No one can take that away from her. I think Sarah has an incredible nose for the game. I think she got played hard in this finale where she had no nose for the game. But I think generally through the season, she's mm-hmm. a really fantastic Survivor player. But what's iconic about Tony, and this is hard to do, like this, I would not even advise people to do this. No one's seeking my advice about going on Survivor, but I would not say that this is good. But Tony, while he's on top, is willing to go rogue and make moves that I'm sitting at home on my couch and being like, you don't need to do that.
Yeah.
But I think one of the most pivotal moments in Tony's game is when he cut Sarah's legs out from under her and got rid of Sophie.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that was stupid, but it evolves to be one of his more brilliant moves. Sarah has nowhere else to go. I was with you. I thought Sarah was going to be done with him, maybe work together with him in name, but not actually mean anything. But he did it at the right time. It looks like chaos to me at home, but he knows what he's doing. He's not afraid to make those moves. And that, I think, differentiates him from a good player to be, like, an unbelievable player.
Yeah. That's a really great point, and I don't think I've heard it articulated like that in that way, because that I know that you're not the biggest fan of the sports, but I feel like that a lot of times you see teams, when they're up by a lot, they play it very safe, and I think they have that in Survivor, too, and that's what ultimately gives the other team a chance to have a comeback. They're not putting the pedal through the metal, as Jeff Probst likes to say. But Tony, when he's up, that he's not content. Like, he's going to still make a big move while he's up and to try to make sure to he's going to, like, take care of the potential problem before it becomes a problem.
And it's wild to do that. Like, like that's the equivalent of sort of taking off the necklace. Now, granted, Tony was safe a number of times with immunity when he was willing to do those things. But I think that's what gets frustrating about a Ben or at times a Sarah. It's like the people who are in control should get credit yeah. for being in control. But from an audience perspective, like, you don't want those people to just, like, get to the end and, like, that's it and it's a pagonging and whatever. So it's like, you know, we're all Michelle being like, well, you're going to march to the end and Tony's going to beat you. Believe that. I'll tell you that for free.
Mm-hmm.
So it's exciting about Tony And he's right when he does it. It's not just, you know, he's sort of like all of the chaos and insanity of the players who could never win with the strategic chops of the players who have boring wins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where we saw how Boston Rob plays the game this season. And I've talked about this where Boston Rob, his style of play is to get the big lead and then never give the other team a chance to take, like, we're going to have the buddy system. We're going to basically sit here and stare at each other and nobody's going to move and nobody's going to talk to each other. And that's how we're going to keep our group together, which is really the antithesis of the way that Tony would play the game.
This is sort of a weird thing to respond with that, but it's like we've done this a while now. You may be used to this. Like, I'm thinking a lot about the utility of the spy nest, which
yes.
Can't believe I'm saying those words in that order, but...
Tell me about, like, the brilliance of the spy nest.
Sarah, you guys were talking about this on Know It Alls, but it's like the genius of it is in that, from Sarah's perspective, Tony's in a tree. Know where Tony is. And I think that's really true and really interesting. I'm surprised it never gave Sarah the... And maybe this is where Tony... Like, Tony's chaos helps him in that... If I were Sarah, I would be like... She said this. Like, I'm the one bringing them to the well. I'm the one having the relationships. I'm the one getting the information. That should be a credit to me. And Tony's there watching it. Why doesn't Sarah have a little bit of a feeling of like... Don't you trust me, Tony, to give you the information? Like, why do you have to watch me get it? And so I'm sort of like, how much of it is like Tony is doing this for television and it's fun and this is how Tony entertains himself? And how much of it is like, if I'm watching Sarah, then she can't even be tempted to flip on me? Because in no way was Sarah allowed to have those conversations and entertain voting out Tony.
Yeah, it's a good point in terms of what's in it for Sarah to let Tony spy on her conversations.
I don't know. And maybe it's just like, it's fun. They trust each other. And one thing I value with Tony, and I think it's interesting that he said this in his final tribal, like, closing argument of, you know, I tried to be a good winner, like worthy of the season. Or like, we've heard him say this before. Like, he basically says, like, I'm trying to produce entertaining content worthy of season 40, and I've tried to make moves to be your winner, to represent the show and to represent the season. And so I think that's more why he does it. Like, I don't think he doesn't trust Sarah, but from Sarah's perspective, why allow that to happen? It's almost like communicates a certain amount of mistrust in her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's sort of like, okay, well, you know, couples that share a Facebook page, but then also then like the guy has his own Facebook page that's not the same, that the wife doesn't have access to.
Are you speaking from experience, Rob?
I don't have a shared Facebook page with my wife.
I would follow that. I'd friend that account for sure.
Rob and Nicole on Facebook. It's like, who am I messaging? Rob or Nicole? So
goofy, yeah, gal. Goofy gal?
Yeah, it is. You make a good point about that. I think that would be an interesting thing to ask Sarah. What was the perk of having a spy nest? Because she's not getting any new information.
Now, maybe she, like, going back to her argument that in her dreams, it was her and Tony against each other, because maybe she feels like she can say everything he says. Adam, you're going to love this. I was in a spy nest. Like, whatever. I love that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But Sarah can say, but I was the one, feet on the ground, bringing people in and having the conversations, and Tony was in the clouds watching. So maybe it was just knowing that every chaotic thing he was going to say, she had an answer of, like, why she was actually the heartbeat and the brain of the operation. And I think if you're letting him do these, like, I'm building a ladder, I can do it, I'm getting this breadfruit, and she's like, I'm actually, look at how I tamed this chaotic person, and I was actually doing the work. So maybe it is, like, an embarrassment of him in a way, like, oh, you were in the spy nest, but who brought people there? You know, you were there for hours. No one would have come by.
Yeah, on the one hand, I could see why she would say, okay, well, yeah, I'm the one that's actually having the relationship with Ben and Denise. Sure, you want to watch me from up in the tree, you know, be my guest. That go for it. But at the point where then he wants to have the big reveal of, oh my God, you guys, I couldn't believe it, that I was up in the tree. I was watching you with talking to Ben. And then I think then I would feel like a real betrayal. Like, wait, hold on, Sarah, you knew he was up in the tree and you led me there to go have our conversations. Like all the conversations that we had, you knew Tony was spying on us from the tree. So I kind of feel like that on the one hand that she's the one having the relationships, but I feel like it's almost like a bigger betrayal from her that she brought you somewhere where she knew Tony was spying on you.
See, I was going to say that's why this is Rob has a podcast, not Ali has a podcast, but does that not play in to the sort of like, why is Tony allowed to do this invasion of privacy and gets credit? But if I betray you in the same way, and I get it that it's like, he's just there, but he's there to spy on his allies also, right? He's there to spy on Ben and Denise. There's only three other people there.
Yeah.
Why is then Sarah the betrayal? And maybe it goes back to sort of like, you punish the person that you got closer to, like you punish the person who had better social bonds with you. But I don't know. Like, I think that's very interesting because I agree. My instinct would be, well, the person who knew about it and laid the trap somehow does feel worse than the person listening. But should it?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's necessarily gendered. Like, I think if Sarah's in the tree and Tony's there, like, you'd blame Tony more too, but maybe that's not
yeah.
fair.
Yeah, in the case of Tony and Sarah, yeah, I think it gets a little confusing. But I think if this was two guys that were doing this, and I think you'd still be more mad at the person that lured you where Tree Guy could spy on you. I think you'd be more mad if Well Guy knew Tree Guy is up in the tree and Well Guy is still luring you. I think you're still mad at that person, but I do think it also is a interesting question, building off of what we're talking about, of what would a female version of Tony look like in this game, and would it even be possible, or would the woman Tony just be, would she get through casting? Would she be voted out immediately? Is there an opening for a female Tony type character? Now, again, there's not another male Tony, so it's very hard to imagine, but is this even possible to have a female version of this type of character?
Tony, I'm calling you Tony now. I'm wishful thinking. Rob, are you just asking how I would do on Survivor? Is this the question?
Yeah.
No, that's really interesting. But like, what is a female Tony, right? Like, it's somebody who's like, it's almost like what was very interesting to me, and I'm really jumping around, but you know, hold on to your hats. There was a very interesting moment in Final Tribal where, and you're going to have to explain this to me later when we're going to get to it or never, whatever, this is your show, like, where Boston Rob says, you didn't make me feel good, Natalie. Like, you alienated me and Ethan and Ewell, and, like, you didn't make me feel good. And Parvati says, like, Natalie is unapologetically herself. She says what she wants, and, like, sorry that that doesn't work for everyone, but I love it. And in that moment, I was like, is Natalie the closest thing we've had to a female Tony? Like, she'll cuss out John Rocker.
Yeah.
She'll like, you know, have spaghetti with you in bed and then slit your throat and play idols and be wild about it. Like, you know, she's not making llama calls, but is she sort of like a similar style player?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I can't see her up in a tree, but...
Can you not, though? I feel like she could shimmy up in two shakes.
She could. She hasn't thought to do that. You know, I always think back to, like, I kind of connect them because they both played in the same year in 2014, and she played right after Tony won his season, where Tony wins his season in May, and then they ship out to San Juan del Sur, like, a week or two after that. And she said in her bio at that time that Tony was a big influence on her, and when she was in the mix for, I guess it was for Game Changers, that I remember at the time being like, oh, okay, hey, Natalie is going to have the chance to maybe play with Tony in a season, and then ultimately she ends up getting a concussion and they don't end up going out on that season. But there was a time that it was even like at a live know-it-alls, I had asked her like a question during that time about like her feelings on Tony, and I remember like she was very, very high on Tony. So I think that's probably a pretty good comparison. Like, there is no other Tony, but maybe that's the closest. So maybe a female Tony would be successful.
I mean, they're both close with Jeremy.
Now, that being said, her identical twin sisters also voted out first. So they have, I guess, a high variance to be, but much like the real Tony.
I do. Yeah, I mean, I do love that. I love that even Natalie talks about it, like that her and Nadia are like interchangeable. Like that's like, oh, well, in, you know, two shots they had in the same season, one won and one got voted out, as though like they have no other differences between them. They're the same exact person. Yeah, no, I mean, it's so hard to say. Like, would they get through casting is probably the most interesting question, I think, of what we've posed. Like, but I don't know. You want to sit here and we'll talk about what casting is looking for in a female contestant?
No, 16-year-olds. 16-year-olds.
Can I ask about that? Well, I see. Maybe we'll talk about that after. But I suspect that that's because those are like lower risk individuals in the pandemic. That he's like, we got to aim young.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, well, let's talk more about season 41 coming up in a little bit. That's an interesting theory.
I feel like
theory.
You can end the podcast at any time. I got to get everything out.
Yeah, okay. So you mentioned something from The Edge of Extinction that I thought was interesting, and that I addressed this with Natalie a little bit in the exit interview. It does seem like that The Edge of Extinction, I think, got kind of clicky, I think, as it started with all the old school players, but then it seemed like that when the new school people started to fill in The Edge of Extinction, it seems like that Natalie was trying to play both sides to some degree, and it seemed like that was something that really annoyed Rob, where that she was spending more time hanging out with the new school players towards the end of her run on The Edge of Extinction.
So I had my, you know, my pre-call with the great Jonathan Foreman.
Yeah, what did JoFo, the mofo, have to say?
Well, what he said, because I raised this where I was like, I don't understand. That's like such an unlikable moment from Rob at Final Tribal. And he was like, it's very strange that we saw that moment, given that we didn't see anything about it on the show. And that's really true. Like, I was left confused what the heck Rob meant by that. Natalie's answer didn't really shed more light on it, although I stan Natalie, who said, it worked for me. Like, that was the best. But she's sort of like, I withdrew from you guys. I'm glad. I shouldn't say I wanted to see more about that storyline on EOE, because I didn't. But it's a very strange thing to show us, and then, like, that's all we get is Rob's perception that, I guess it was clicky is a good way to put it. But why does that matter? Like, I get it if, you know, people talk about Chris, like, made them feel good, like, was great to be around, provided them food, and, like, that's sort of where Tyson's vote for Natalie comes from. They were good friends, he wants to vote for someone that he cares about and likes, and, like, that's his vote. So maybe you need to be doing a better job on EUE of having, like, a grin on and welcoming everyone and keeping those social bonds up, but it's almost like, why does Rob care about whether or not Natalie, like, made him feel warm and fuzzy? His freaking wife is there.
Yeah. I suspect, if I had to guess, based on, like, the little bit, I know about, like, life on The Edge of Extinction, and then also when you factor in, you know, the Boston Rob of it all. So I suspect that The Edge of Extinction might have been, like, a different place before Rob got there, where it was probably, you know, it was Natalie and Danny and Amber and Ethan and Tyson and, you know, everything is, like, kind of copacetic and, you know, friendly. And then Rob gets there, and then, okay, so everything is still fine. Like, hey, we're all getting along. But then I suspect, as more of the quote-unquote, like, new school players started to arrive, that I bet it was kind of like an Ometepe Zapatera thing that started to develop, where it's like, hey, this is our group of people over here. And then, you know, I don't know if it came down to, like, you know, who gets the good spots in the shelter, but I feel like that I could see the old school sort of, like, being, like, the lunch group at the, like, hey, this is our table. You guys need to find somewhere else to sit. And then as, like, you know, Wendell and Adam and other people were coming in, I think I could see it being more of, hey, there's our group, and then you guys find your own table. And then Natalie, wanting to get back into the game, was socializing, more with the people at the other lunch table.
See, that's interesting, especially because Parvati and I always pronounce her name wrong. People get at me over it.
Parvati, you got it.
Okay, Parvati doesn't work for my mouth. Parvati and Tyson, who are close friends and allies of Boston Rob, seem to have gotten extremely close to Natalie.
Yeah.
So I would be curious to know if anything was weird with their relationships. But I think you're making a great point about it. And that I think that checks out with what we did see or didn't see. But it was also maybe Boston Rob is like a high threat to get back in the game. I mean, Parvati and Tyson are too. But like we did see little vignettes of like people working together, like who ate peanut butter with Parvati. And we saw Natalie and Parv looking for stuff together and ultimately sharing that or at least finding the extortion advantage together. Or was it the Nick one? Whatever.
Yeah. I mean, not everybody necessarily might have shared Rob's opinion of, you know, people like Parvati or Tyson might have felt like, no, and this is still the same old Natalie. And Rob might have felt like, no, she's different. She's hanging out with a whole other crowd.
Well, no, I mean, I think Parvati and Natalie and Tyson definitely didn't share Rob's opinion. But I think maybe it's also like Natalie was working to find advantages with like certain groups of people and not others. And we saw like the way people take off, like some people work together and talk about things together, share their peanut butter. So, I mean, the more I hear about Edge, the more terrible it is. Like, rats were like biting at your fingers and toes. And, you know, like it truly is survival. Like I was watching when I was watching the finale and Natalie gets to have that like last day breakfast or whatever. Like she's about to eat something. And somebody was like, is this Natalie's first meal?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, it is. Like, as much as being on Survivor is already hard, like, Natalie has only had rice and peanut butter.
but in fairness, she did have, like, 4,000 calories worth of peanut butter, like, right before the Edge of Extinction Challenge.
But have you ever done a juice cleanse? You know, it's, like, not the same when you can't chew. Like, I don't mean that she was starving.
I think you
mean
a crunchy.
That did not look crunchy. I didn't see any chunks in that jar.
Oh, I think it was crunchy.
Don't you want to know who's their peanut butter provider? Can you ask that in the... I've asked this to somebody else, but like, I would like to know maybe in Mike Bloom's coverage of like how they make the show, he could email someone like, what is that Skippy? We got Jif? Like,
no,
what kind of
I bet it's
that?
Like Fijian generic whatever is at the supermarket.
Fijian generic? I want to know.
I don't know.
Peter Pan? Fred LaBelle. What do we have?
I don't think it's Peter
Smuckers?
Pan.
Smuckers?
No, I don't think so.
It's not natural. That's no separation.
Let's talk a little
do
bit.
Do you want to talk more about the people?
No, I think we're good. I think we're good. let's talk a little bit about Michelle, who ends up, you know, getting the short straw in this final three. She ends up being the zero vote finalist. A lot of people were wondering what Michelle could have done differently, potentially. Let me play you a voicemail about this. This comes to us from one of our listeners, Jillian.
Hi, Rob. This is Jillian from Richmond, Virginia. I was just wondering if you thought Michelle would have a chance to win in a final three versus Sarah and Natalie if Michelle had won the final four immunity over Natalie and beaten Tony at Fire. I think this is the only way she would have gotten enough votes to take down Sarah and Natalie with both of their strong relationships on the jury. But I do think this scenario would give her a chance to win. Would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Okay. All right. So this is an interesting question in terms of Michelle. Now, I thought that Michelle really needed probably to make the fire. I think that Michelle's case looks a little bit differently if she beats Tony potentially in making the fire. Do you think, though, that does Michelle need to win the immunity also at Final Four?
This is hard because if you say the wrong thing, the Michelle stands will eat you alive.
Mm-hmm.
No, I want to say a few things about Michelle. I want to qualify that, and this was also a conversation I had with Jofo, that zero vote finalist is not necessarily like a pejorative term. Like, I don't think that being a zero vote finalist is like a terrible outcome. Obviously, you haven't won. But, like, she's not zero vote finalist is not equal to zero vote finalist is not equal to zero vote finalist. If that makes sense.
They're at not least all in my perspective. Equal. Yes.
And Stephen Fishback, who's not listening, is like, exactly.
yeah.
I.
But don't make it like he's not listening because you're the guest. He's not listening because that's not what he does.
Stephen Fishback is like my grandpa. Not that I have any grandpas who are alive, but like he's like the guy who just like makes the same joke every time because he doesn't know what else to say because you have nothing else to talk about. Like,
see, somebody will play this part for him.
I love Stephen Fishback. Look, I have an outstanding invitation for Stephen Fishback to come on the Challenge podcast. Has he responded?
No.
Yeah, he responded, but has he set a date? No.
No. Yeah, that sounds about right.
So I'm trying, Stephen. Stephen can take it. It's fine. We're friends.
Yeah. Yeah. okay.
All right, let's go back
to Michelle.
So here's the thing with Michelle. I think Michelle had the best possible outcome that she could have. I said this earlier in the season. This is not like I was right. I would have been a few weeks ago. I was ready to like tweet out like she exceeded my expectations and congratulations to the winner, Michelle. Like I thought there was a chance that she could pull this out, and I would have been absolutely thrilled with that result. That being said, I just think on this season, people were really conscious of who's representing season 40, and Michelle never gave up. She was always on the bottom. She finagled her way out of situations where she should have been voted out when Yul got voted out. Like, she really survived. She was phenomenal. I don't see a world where she won the game once it got down to, like, five, once Ben left.
Yeah.
Because, like, even if she makes fire against Tony, she's not winning fire against Tony.
Right.
Like, Sarah didn't win fire against Tony. Like, I just don't think almost anyone couldn't have won fire against Tony.
Yeah. No, it's hard to envision the scenario where she's going to outflank Tony or even Sarah, for that matter. I think that the issue here for Michelle is that she probably should have gotten at least a couple of votes. 16 people on the jury. She should have gotten some of the votes, you would think, after, you know, she has a couple of immunity wins, you know, has advantages, is getting fire tokens, spunky character.
I take issue with the should have gotten a few votes. Like, I don't envy Michelle's position. When I say that she had the best possible outcome, I don't mean to say that, like, sitting there with your sister in your house, like, listening to 16 votes get read and you didn't get a single one is a good outcome. I'm not saying that, like, that at all. But, and to answer Jillian's question, like, yeah, if Michelle wins immunity, gives up the necklace, and beats Tony, maybe she's got a shot against Sarah because that's so wild. But in reality, like, what is getting, and I think Michelle had a really good perspective on this in her interview, but, like, what is should have gotten a few votes? Like, if it was a ranking system,
yeah,
and it would be, I think a lot of people would have had Michelle 2 over Natalie, but I think most people were like, Tony won this season. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's a knock to Michelle that she didn't get any votes against Tony.
Let me ask you about this. This was from Michelle's interview with Dalton Ross, talking about how one of the reasons why she didn't end up getting votes from people. She tells Dalton Ross, I knew that Adam, Nick, Wendell, and Danny were actually on the cusp of voting for me. They voted for Tony. And I talked about this with them post-game. They all, as soon as the votes were read, they came to me and told me that there was a situation that Natalie could have potentially won. So instead, they sided with Tony just to make sure that the right person won the season. And to be honest with you, the majority of us have never had a chance to actually crown a winner of Survivor. We've always been the person being voted for. And so I think it's kind of an honor to vote for the person to win. So I do you feel like that was this a real thing where that the people either A, wanted to vote for the person who was going to win and not quote unquote vote for a person who would potentially waste their vote? Or do you think that these were there were a lot of never edgers out there on the jury that didn't want to see an edge of extinction person potentially win because they voted for a third party candidate?
So two things. One, I stan a queen who's like, I think people who have never had the opportunity to vote for a winner wanted to. I've also never had that opportunity, but I imagine it's an honor.
Yes,
I love that.
Yes.
But, like, okay. So I guess three things. That's one. Two is, if you've seen a person naked, you should probably vote for them to get $2 million. I don't think Wendell is off the hook at all.
Okay.
I was texting that.
Yeah, he owes her a vote, you're saying.
That's the deepest betrayal. Like, if you've kicked it with someone, you vote for them to win $2 million. Adam, Nick, and whoever else she said, totally fine. I agree. Mm-hmm. I was thinking this last night, too. Granted, it was 16 votes. Only four fell to Natalie. So Tony pretty much safely won regardless. When you start throwing hinky votes because you want to control second place, like, that's really never been my thing. The ask is vote for who you think deserves to win, and the person with the second most number of votes will get second place. I don't think you should start being like, well, I like Michelle, and I would like her to win over Natalie for second place, yeah, so I'm going to game my vote. Like, vote for the person you think should win, unless you're Wendell, and then you vote for Michelle,
yeah,
and he should hear about that.
Somebody could have thrown her a bone. Okay? We've seen that before. We've seen that survivors, they say, okay, I don't want this person to get zero votes. Let's give them something.
Can you edit me out? Me laughing at that?
If you really want me to, I can.
No, it's fine. It's okay. No, I mean, I think, yes, I get it. I get the, like, pity vote, but it's sort of like, what does that even do? I think Michelle has the exact right attitude, which is like, this was Tony's season to win. I'm proud. Like, she should, I love that the jury put respect on Michelle's name. She should feel absolutely great about it. It seems like Survivor finally figured out how to edit Michelle's game. And that seems to be enough. Like, great, it would have been great if she won, but Tony was there, and who cares? Who's going to remember, you know, second and third?
Mm-hmm. And I really feel like that the worst outcome for Michelle after, you know, the thing that she's been on through this whole experience would be, could you imagine if Michelle ended up being the winner of the season, and then if you thought that Aubrey should have won was bad, then the rest of her life she's going to have to hear, but Tony should have won. Tony got robbed.
Well, that's what's so weird, right, is like, because we're not watching a live feed, and you're not going to be interested in this at all, but here I am saying it, like, and this is maybe why they didn't have the Zoom reunion, because you can't just, like, jump in and cut my mic, but the show we would have watched if Michelle won, I think, would have been different, especially since, like, they totally screwed her in her season. So it's hard to say, like, yeah, I do think people would have said Tony would have won, but who knows, do we get the Tony-level content we got if Tony ends up going out in fourth, even if Sarah wins? I think we would have watched a different show if Sarah won.
Yeah.
Or I should say, I hope we would have watched a different show. Or if Survivor really hasn't stopped setting up their female winners to look like crap.
Let's answer a couple other questions here. I have a question for you about the biggest surprises and disappointments of the season. And we can focus on the surprises. Do you have any big surprises outside of Tony?
What's the biggest surprise of the season?
Yeah, who were the biggest surprises for you? Did anybody come out and really outperform expectations that you had for them?
You know, let me talk about Ben in this spot.
Okay.
Because I don't remember what I said about Ben. I remember not being excited to talk about almost everyone I had to talk about in the preview that we did. But I think Ben's a complicated fellow, because I think he really gave a lot of great comedic relief, especially earlier on, like pre-Tony, before Tony really emerged as the entire season. I think he was fun. I liked him way more than I liked him, on his season. And I actually had, like, an emotional reaction to him basically leaving the game for Sarah's game.
Yeah.
And to me, I'm the most surprised. He was probably one of the people I was looking the least forward to seeing on the season. And now if I saw Ben again, I would smile. I would be surprised, but I would be like, oh, Ben. I don't think he's the greatest strategic player, but everyone has different strengths, and I'm glad we got to see Ben come back, and I'm sorry for what Ben has had to deal with in response from the season, but I was surprised at how much I enjoyed Ben on the show.
Yeah, I think he had a rough ride along the way. I thought he said some interesting things in the interview that I did with him today about how that he didn't want to be that zero vote finalist or at least sort of like sitting in the abyss of waiting for the votes to be read for a year only to know that he was going to lose. That I think that he really just wanted to, you know, take himself out of the equation. He knew he wasn't going to win. That I don't think he wanted to sit there in front of the jury and potentially be the like, hey Ben, like what did you even do this season? And get, you know, really raked over the coals. And so, you know, I kind of like respect that he saw where it was going. He said that's not what I want, and then sort of like engineered this outcome for himself. I mean, that financially, I don't think that it's a huge difference between where he finishes and where he would have been. I have to like check the charts on that to see how big of a difference that is. But I think he saw the writing on the wall.
Yeah, and that even impressed me from Ben, because I feel like Ben generally this season did not have a good sense of like where he stood in relation to the other players. So the fact that Ben is taking into account, although I don't think the fire tokens indicate who you'd vote for at the end. Mm-hmm. I think he's like, look, I'm not getting any fire tokens willed to me. I'm not getting advantages from the edge. I'm not, like, I was actually impressed with that level of game sense to come from Ben. But I equate it to sort of what happened with Sandra. Like, I have no problem with Sandra exiting Edge of Extinction and saying, I'm not going to come back. This isn't for me. This isn't worth my time, stress, mental energy, mental health, whatever. I'm out. Like, that's sort of what happened with Ben. Is like,
yeah,
I could be here. I could make the final three, but I'm going to get abused. And I'm not interested in that. And I think that's valid. And if people want to call it a quit, that's fine. What I wish Sarah had done, and it's not, and this would have been sort of like a test of like, how much of it is Ben trying to help Sarah and how much is Ben just out. Because, and this has been discussed, but it, like, obviously wasn't a good move for Sarah. It was, like, actively a bad move for Sarah's game. But to have agency in the game, if Sarah had said, Ben, I need you to stay. I need you to either be a fire assassin or take a dive in fire or win the final immunity, give me the necklace, you take someone out in fire, you go home, like, whatever. Like, do it then. I need you now. Then the story is very compelling of like, I had this option. Someone laid their game down for me and I controlled it to get to X, Y, and Z result. Whereas here, even if Sarah made it to the end, I don't see anyone giving her credit. Either it comes out because Ben, like someone else I know, me, has a big mouth, would have gone to the edge and told everyone what he did.
Yeah.
Or people would have seen it as like, oh, wow, Natalie and Michelle convinced, did what... Probably Natalie, because Michelle wasn't able to do it before, but Natalie convinced Sarah to flip on her two strongest allies and vote out Ben. What a coup for Natalie. I don't see any world where Sarah gets credit for this.
Yeah. Although she gets a jury vote out of it, so there is like some upside for it. So you're right. I don't see it being like a real like feather in her cap, but I do think that, you know, I could see some upside for her, and maybe Ben is able to like start the campaign for Sarah on the jury.
Am I missing any other big surprises? I mean, Sophie, I would say, is like a full standout from the season. And one thing I've been thinking about a lot is like, are any of these people coming back? If so, when? If so, who?
Okay. Who are the people that was one of the things on my list to talk about? Who are the people that will be back for another round from season 40?
Well, it was very weird that Jeff basically told, like, said to people, including Tyson, like, if this is it for you, give us your
okay,
farewell.
Well, let me play a couple of those, because, yeah, this was super weird. Well, we started with Kim, and I thought this was one of the weirdest things, ways to start a conversation with Kim.
Kim.
Yeah.
You're always so good at wrapping up your story. So when you look back on this, Winners at War, what was it about?
You're always so good at wrapping up your story. How often is she doing this?
No one ever has said that to me, so can't relate. Yeah, I thought that was very strange. Like, you know, I always go to you to give the back cover on your day-to-day life. I don't know. I have no idea what he was talking about.
Yeah, and then he went from there to Tyson.
Tyson, if this is the end for you, wrap it up for me.
It's like... Allie, if this is the last podcast that you ever do, well, what did it all
mean?
Oh,
God forbid.
Yeah.
That means I don't even make it to tomorrow.
Yeah.
I record my own podcast. Yeah, I thought it was weird. I thought it was... The first time... I watched this episode twice. The first time I watched this, I was literally cringing. I felt so uncomfortable. The second time, I was until they got to Ethan, then I was like, oh, I love this.
Yeah.
Second time, I loved this moment. I don't know which is more shocking. I think it's weird to say, like, to kiss everyone goodbye and say they'll never be back. That was strange and sort of unnecessary. But I did love this sort of closure moment. I think the show has done a really good job of respecting everyone who came back when they didn't have to. And maybe some of them should. I don't think anyone shouldn't have. But, like, maybe some people are feeling that way. Like, mm-hmm. they put their, you know, some people are going to later be behind a microphone and talk about, like, whether their legacy is totally screwed up because they came back. Or even worse, I will talk about them. Mm-hmm. So it's a brave choice for any of them to have come back. And so I think the show has done a really good job of respecting that choice and showing reverence for them. So I think this was a good moment. Generally, I felt very sad, and I'm curious to know how Sophie actually feels when Kim said, I don't regret coming back at all. I'm so glad that I did this. Sophie does not nod. Sophie just looks down. I'm like, does Sophie have regrets here? I don't think she should.
No, Sophie was very silent. I think from the time that she got voted off, I think that, I'm not even sure if this was in the episode. It was a secret scene. She was with Tyson. She was crying. I don't think we hear her speak again. I don't think that she, did she ask a question during the final tribal council? We know that she got sick at some point and missed one of the tribal councils down the stretch. So I don't think we got a wrap up on Sophie. We really didn't get any So Fierce content after she gets voted out.
Yeah, I need to know if Sophie's okay.
Well, it was a quiet boot episode for Sophie too.
Has anyone ever missed a tribal council before?
Yes, it's happened before.
Okay.
Pascal missed one in Survivor Marquesas in the Marquesa, and I think it's happened. Well, I think Joe Del Campo might have missed one. I'm not sure if he does. He come back for the jury, or is he? Yeah, I don't remember. No, because I don't think he comes back and votes for.
He was gone.
Was he gone? He was gone for good. Yeah, I think somebody else has missed one a time or two. Like, there's got to be like a couple of survivors that just drank too much by the pool, weren't able to rally for the tribal council.
Can relate. But no, I think I don't know. I feel like Sophie might. I'm very curious to see her next interview with you. I mean, I think not having a reunion is like best case scenario for a podcast listener and creator. Like, I'm excited to hear what everyone is going to say when they talk to you, Sophie definitely included.
Yeah.
But the original, I took us so far off track. The original question was like, who's coming back?
Who's going to come back again? Okay.
I think Sophie is really
high up
there.
Let's have a draft. Okay.
Oh, well, I just revealed.
So you have Sophie as number one.
Well, I didn't think I was going to have to draft. You know how good I am at drafts.
Okay. Well, do you want to take that back as your number one?
Let me think for a second. No, I'll keep Sophie in as my number one.
Number one.
I think she has a lot more left to show. She went out on like one of the highest notes where everybody like thought she was going to win. She had an idol in her pocket. She has unfinished business there. And then we didn't hear from her. So we didn't even get her closure story. So I feel good about that.
See, I wouldn't take her number one only because I just don't know what her desire is to come back. Like, I think that they would be open to having her come back, but I'm not sure if she necessarily loved the experience of coming back a second time. So I would want to know that the desire is there.
Is that inside information? Because, like, your friend.
No, it's like, I have no inside information. it's my lack of inside information that is scaring me.
I think Sophie Sophie's life is great. Why would she want to come back? But at the end of the day, I think the lore is strong. Even you, Rob, you were like, I'll never come back
for me.
And then very recently you were like, I go back and forth.
I do go back and forth. Like, I think it would be exciting to get ready to go back. It would be exciting to get your picture taken. What would not be exciting is when everybody wants to vote me out first. That will not be exciting. And then I will be very bitter and jaded after that.
So you forgo the 10 grand and you go home like Venus. You'll be back.
We'll see. All right. I'm going to go with my... We don't have to do snake draft. We can go back and forth. I'm going to go with my first pick. I think that Michelle Fitzgerald is the number one draft pick to come back and will play a third time. How about that?
I like it.
Yeah.
I'm here for it. I'm here for Michelle coming back.
Yeah.
But do you think, like, once they do this... What's the season? And I know we'll pick more people, right? Because we're going to get to a point where, like, okay, we're picking people who are even underrated despite being on an all-winter season and being phenomenal on it. But, like, we're going to run out of those people. And then it's sort of like, if we talk about the big guns, like, is Tony ever coming back? Like, no. How do you integrate Tony? I think you need to do one of those, like, Coach Ozzy coaching seasons, and I don't think they're doing that. So it's almost like some people, even if they would come back, I don't think the format will allow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would be hard to come up with a All-Stars format. Like, I think you could do some sort of, like, winners at war with people that didn't win. Like, I think that that's an idea for a season, because I think there's a lot of people that would be, like, really fun casting people to bring back. But to bring more winners back again in another season that's not winners at war. And, you know, people have talked for a long time about legends, but I think that so many of the legends, I think, are just now retired after this season.
Okay, I'm gonna do something bold. I'm gonna reveal my strategy here.
Yeah.
I'm gonna quickly tick through who I think is never coming back.
Okay.
Or should I not do that?
You could do that.
Ethan.
Right.
Gone. Not Ethan's on. Ethan gone.
Yeah.
Love Ethan. I think that's his choice.
Yeah,
I think
he doesn't want to play again.
Nick, I don't think is getting asked back.
Not getting asked back to play again.
I said it.
Yeah.
I don't think they did him dirty in a way that he's like not.
Yeah, like, I don't think they knew what to do with him as a character. I mean, I wouldn't say that the door is closed, but it doesn't seem like that he's I don't think that he's like high on the speed dial.
You drafting him?
I know.
Okay. I think Parv is probably done.
She's
I
done.
Think Amber's definitely done. I was going to say, I think Ben is done.
I think Ben's done. I don't think he wants to come back and play again.
Okay. I think Ben's done, but maybe less confirmed done than, say, like Ethan.
Sure.
I'm going to say that Danny's not getting asked again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's all the people I will just, like, fully cross out.
Take off.
Tony, okay. I'll cross out.
Okay.
All right. So the next person I'm going to pick, do you disagree with any of those people?
No, I agree with it with everything.
Anyone, well, I guess should you say if you'd add anyone to that list of never?
I'm trying to think. I think Sandra, I'd add her to the list. I think Sandra is done.
Really? I feel like, because they won't ask her? Because I feel like her whole thing is, I say yes anytime they call me.
Yeah, I guess so. But I kind of feel like, I think after four times, I kind of feel like we got, I can't imagine the scenario up for the season where you're bringing Sandra back again.
Do you think that Survivor season 50 Survivor Legends is off the table now that we've done Winners at War?
I don't think it's off the table.
So you think Sandra wouldn't be asked back?
I guess so. I guess you're going to need some old school legends, and I think that if we're saying that most of them are retired, so yeah, I could see I could see her gearing up one more time. I think she's probably retired, but I guess I would leave the door open.
I'm going to take Natalie with my next pick.
Oh, that's a good one.
Thank you.
Okay. So I would say I am going to. Oh, there's a couple. There's a couple of good ones still out there.
It's a good cast.
Yeah,
some might say the best in reality TV history.
I am going to say Adam Klein, because I think you were going to pick him next.
That's correct. That is correct. Good for you. Should I just start anticipating your picks?
Sure.
I mean, we're sort of running out of people. So it's so weird, right? I feel like, you know what? I'm going to just flip it. I'm going to pick Jeremy.
Jeremy. Yeah, that's another good one.
But not because I thought you were going to pick him next, just because I wanted to pick Jeremy.
Okay, pick Jeremy. I could see Jeremy playing him again.
Because it's almost like people who left with more to give. Like, and that's definitely an editing thing, but I think there's some people who left with nothing else to give and nothing else to take from the experience. And then there's Jeremy, who I think has a lot left to do if he wants to.
I do feel like, though, that Jeremy, and I'd like to talk to him about this, that probably feels frustrated by the experience of, like, nobody's ever going to let me get to the end again.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to talk to him about the experience, too, but I don't get that luxury. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I agree. I mean, it's almost like nobody was it's like how Kim was in the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, no one's talking to me. No one's willing to work with me. And you'd have to think, like, he'd have to be on a season like this again where everybody's a big target. But if you get enough time, it's like Tony, enough time heals all.
Yeah.
He didn't win this game. And people even brought up, like, he didn't win challenges.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have strong alliances. He had a couple, but he couldn't really get anything together. Couldn't get movement.
Mm-hmm.
What's the threat? Like, I agree that he's a big threat, but maybe it's the same kind of clown show. I mean, it's not really, but maybe with enough time and with this season, he becomes less of a threat depending on who else emerges in the Survivor universe. But that's probably, no one's going to be playing that clip in 5 years saying, look how right I was, probably.
Mm-hmm. Hey, then that'll be a great button to this clip. Okay, and then I want to take Kim. I want to draft Kim.
Interesting.
Because to me,
I don't know. I don't think Kim comes back.
That Kim really feels like after this experience, I think that the experience of playing with Tony, I think, oh, there's another gear that I can kick things into. And I wonder if we could see Kim come back and play a more aggressive game, like the kind of game that Kim was playing towards the end of the season where, hey, if I can't, you know, play passively from the beginning, like I might need to be the person who, like Tony, who gets up big and then plays aggressively the whole time. That I think that there might be a Spradlin 3.0 that might be different and even better than what we've seen before.
From your lips to Probst's ears,
yeah.
I would be so I think they'd have her back. My concern would be, is she done? Is she sort of like, I was perfect, then I was imperfect, and now I'm good, and like my kids are growing up, and I'm done?
Mm-hmm.
I would be so here for that. I totally agree. I think the third iteration of Kim would be phenomenal. I also felt bad for Kim. Like, when Kim was like, I was imperfect now, and that's okay, I was like, I messed everything up, and that... That was not my impression of Kim this season, mm-hmm. that she messed everything up. I think she walked into a bad hand, pardon the poker pun, but, like, she got sidelined into, like, a bad draw of the... I keep making poker puns. She had a bad situation in terms of her first tribe, and then she survived that as long as she could, and then she kind of had nowhere to go, and the target was big, and she got sent home.
Mm-hmm.
And my perception of Kim on this season is not that she is... not the player we thought she was.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else
you
want to take?
Crazy?
No.
Do you disagree? Okay.
I don't disagree. I just think that she was like, this was kind of like a little bit of a wake up call for Kim where it's like, oh, okay. This is like this part, this thing I need to add to my game. And I wonder, you know, she played that perfect game. It's hard to improve a perfect game. So she came back and I think was exposed to a lot of things like, oh, okay, these are things I could be doing differently. And I bet she thinks about the game completely different after this experience.
That's fair. I think there's three more people I think are in the conversation. I'll pick Sarah.
Sarah, yeah.
That's my
question is, does Sarah want to come back a fourth time?
I think Sarah has trouble saying no to this. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that like that's a criticism. Like, how do you say no? Like, I think she still has unfinished business, especially now, like, being a part of, I don't want to say starting, because I think the conversation has already been happening, but being a part of the conversation about bias and freeing herself from the shackles of her last game and only doing that in like the last few minutes of this game. I don't know that she, I don't know that she'd be like would be able to say no so easily if she got asked.
Yeah. Do you want to touch on that while we're here in terms of Sarah Lacina being the person to really bring gender dynamics to the front of this and top of mind to the point where Jeff Probst is apologizing for 20 years of maybe not necessarily getting things right?
No, I don't want to touch
Who had
on that.
That?
I mean, I think it's hard to imagine that Probst is... apology isn't influenced by what happened with Kelly in 29.
Yeah. 39.
To me, it was like, it was brilliant game from Sarah, and I'm not saying she doesn't agree with it, but it was brilliant from Sarah to start, and you asked her this, and she said, like, I said that because I wanted to start letting the jury know my spiel before we get to the end. And I think that's genius, and everyone should be doing that. I think Probst's hair trigger apology, it comes more from the Kelly situation. I mean, I can't say for sure, but that was my sort of view on it, having had the benefit of watching last season, is like, he's there at the ready to say that, like, they've screwed up, because he knows that they've screwed up the last season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very possible. There was also the conversation that it was Kelly with Jamal talking about, like, the idea of the Women's Alliance and that whole part from that season, which sort of got overshadowed by everything else that was going on. So it has been something that Jeff has been very vocal about. Let me also throw in Tyson. I think that Tyson would be up to play again.
So he was definitely on my short list, and then Wendell, I think, was the other one.
Yeah.
But... it's very strange for Tyson to get the, if this is the end for you, how do they bring Tyson back and put that in? I mean, maybe they don't care, but to me, that was like very final.
Yeah.
Tyson got the most final goodbye of like anyone.
Yeah, I think that's the last time that we really hear from him in the episode as well. So, yeah, I don't know. But I don't think that they'll think about that. You know, that's the next time they're going to do a big All-Stars is going to be kind of far away. I was going to say Yule also, but it seems like Yule might not be super comfortable on Survivor. The one time we heard from Yule in the entire three-hour finale, right, was that they throw it to Yule to open things up at Final Tribal Council.
Who wants to get us going?
All right. Getting a little stage fright, Jeff, but here goes.
Wait a minute. You've been on Survivor twice. You have stage fright?
I mean, you know, I'm just feeling kind of pressure, but...
In fairness, he's not used to the format. This is all new. He's, like, becoming the foreman of the jury, which I actually thought was a strange pick. Like, I was happy it was Yule, but I was surprised that Yule was teeing us off.
Yeah, he's read Tree Mail and been in silent meditation, seemingly, for 20 days. And now they throw him into being the foreperson of the jury.
Did you read Boston Rob, speaking of goodbyes, like, notes app? Thank you note on Twitter today?
No, I didn't. Should I take?
So I didn't
bring
either.
It up? Yeah,
because it's out of order, so it's like impossible to read.
What do you mean it's out
Maybe
of order?
Maybe he suggested it. It's like, so it's multiple screenshots of a note of like a written message on his phone.
Yeah,
and it's like he didn't post it so that it
do
went
I have
up
to
in
print
order.
These out and then put them all together.
I don't know. It's like a puzzle. So it starts. It starts with gratitude. ... So it is in order. But when I was reading it, I was like, none of this starts a sentence.
Yeah.
So he wrote a like 5-tweet apology. Not apology. I'm just used to people apologizing.
Yeah.
Note to Mark Burnett. To the head of CBS.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So I think this is maybe definitely the end for the Marianos.
Yeah, wow. This is like a retirement tweet storm.
Like to his family.
Yeah, thanking everybody. Thank everybody.
Jeff Probst is a host. There's no better. Although I will say the end of Final Tribal was very much an audition.
Oh, it's like
for,
nine
like,
pages. Yeah. I didn't realize it was that many.
Friends at CBS. There are way too many to begin to name individually.
Yeah.
Well, that could only go on.
Yeah. Should he have used the Yule Kwan, like a twit longer, to do the, like, basically, like, have one link to a, like, a essay?
What's important to note here, and not to age shame, is that if this is indeed a notes app, which, as a fan of trashy pop culture. I've read a lot of celebrity notes app apologies. I believe the font size is magnified because this is very large print, much larger than it would be. So good to know that even our heroes have struggles.
Yeah. Okay. Allie, let me thank a sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at Brooklinen. Allie, do you realize that you spend a third of your life in sheets?
I think it's been bumped up if you live like me in a studio apartment in quarantine.
Just that number up. Don't you want to be insanely comfortable? So put comfort first, like with new bedding, loungewear, towels, and more. Home of the internet's favorite sheets, Brooklinen's got over 50,000 five-star reviews and counting. Brooklinen products help you find comfort in the little things, morning routines, extra soft sheets, plush towels, etc. If you're working from home, staying comfortable is the best way to stay productive, and Brooklinen is there for me during every part of my daily routine, and a good night's sleep is priceless and increasingly harder to come by, so Brooklinen helped me build a bedroom oasis that is the perfect place to escape. I do love the Brooklinen sheets that also they are the right temperature as well, especially as the weather is getting warmer. You're not too hot or too cold with the Brooklinen sheets. If you like softness, comfort, essentials to help you relax, Brooklinen has it all. Brooklinen.com is the perfect place to find all the comforts for home. And they're so confident in their product that all their sheets, comforters, loungewear, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. Their Memorial Day event kicks off this weekend, so you don't want to miss it. Ease your way into summer with big savings on sheets, bedding, towels, loungewear, and their newest hammock and linen collections. And if you can't wait, you can get 10% off your first order and free shipping on your new sheets right now when you use promo code Rob at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com. Brooklinen, everything you need to live your most comfortable life. That's no sleep till Brooklinen. Okay.
Rob, would you believe that I have told someone recently in the last 2 weeks about how funny I think it is that you say no sleep to Brooklinen?
Yes.
And how crazy it is that they haven't taken you up on your offer to just use that for free. Yeah. Like, that's just a conversation with a non-survivor person. Wow. I've had recently.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. Thank you for...
Just to check in on how I'm doing.
Yeah, thank you for letting some people know about that. Okay. Let me play for you something else that really made me chuckle from the finale. That I loved it when Tony was talking about, you know, that, well, you know, what does Tony do? Tony's not a fancy man, Allie, that he doesn't do a lot of things. And I'm not sure exactly how this came up, but I think they're talking about how, like, Tony could relate to Jeremy. They're both family men. Tony doesn't have a lot of interest. This was Tony talking at the final tribal council.
I don't travel nowhere. I don't go to fine dining.
Yeah.
No one does now, but if you're from Jersey, you wouldn't travel either.
Do you ever go to fine dining?
If me walking from my couch to my table in the same room is fine dining, then I do it every night. Mm-hmm. I thought this was very bizarre because it's sort of like, not that Jeremy's family doesn't travel or go to fine dining. I don't know who doesn't or who does.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a weird answer from Tony to, like, call out Jeremy for being, like, fancy, but saying, but I could still relate to you for our families. Like, Jeremy is, like, you know, like a t-shirt guy, fireman. Like, yeah. They seem to have a lot in common. I don't know I just thought that was a strange play to, like, insult the jury by calling them, like, she.
Yeah, I thought he was saying that, you know, he doesn't have anything in common with anybody, and the only thing he can relate to people about is family.
No, for sure. But it's sort of like, if I'm receiving that on the jury, I would receive that as, like, I'm not snooty. Like, I'm real. We can talk about interest. Like, I think, I mean, he definitely was directing it to Jeremy, but maybe he meant everyone. Like, I don't have interesting stories or, like, things to share that are unique or, like, exciting, but we connected as a family to family.
Yes.
But
oh. It's like, good. Well, I'm glad you brought up the subject of family because Jeff actually...
You brought up the story of family.
Well, then you, but we're talking about it. And so Jeff was talking about how, you know, that the all of the collection of survivors and all the people that watch the show are actually linked in a very unique way.
I'd just like to say that
I think one of the reasons Survivor is so unique is that we are all sort of this giant weird family.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we know who the drunk aunt is. But we're all part of the Survivor family. Everybody that watches the show and the people that go on the show.
That's one thing I want to say about that, and this is maybe too serious for the segue, but what I really loved about that moment is, like, we saw, like, almost a bridge between old school and new school, right? Like, you see Amber say what is, like, a heart-wrenching thing to have carried since she won All Stars. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
That, like,
yeah, that was
she
wild.
Knew... Sorry?
That was wild. That was in there.
Yeah, like, she says, like, I mean, we've seen so many of the women on the show second-guess their win, and then we see Amber say, I know that people only voted for me because they hated him more, and everyone thought, she, like, a very deep dive into what people have said and what she's carried, and they flash to Michelle. And then we have Ethan talk about the unbelievable story of his cancer and his fundraising, funding the drug that saved his life, mm-hmm. that started because of Survivor, and they flash to Adam, who has had a story play out about his connection to his family member that he lost from cancer. Like, it was a very interestingly edited moment of, like, the bridges from the old school pain that still exists in the new school, that, like, as much as things change, they stay the same, and everybody so, like, I really liked that until Jeff weighed in with, like, we are family. Like, that was a little overkill to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I did enjoy the edited moment of, like, the shared pain that they've all kind of gone through.
Yeah. Jeff also had another moment in the episode. And I honestly forget where this came up, where he talked about that it's almost like Survivor is an experience that really teaches us a lot about ourselves.
That Survivor serves the purpose of a well-intentioned but relentless adversary that pushes you to deal with stuff. It's not just 39 days in Fiji. That's a great vacation. This is 39 days of intense personal scrutiny.
Okay. Allie, I have spent a lot of time talking to survivors. Do you feel like that Survivor has helped more people deal with their existing problems, or has created a whole lot of new problems for people? What do you think? Has Survivor solved more problems for people, or has opened up fresh new wounds?
Okay.
Which can only be cured by going back on Survivor.
Potentially the severity of the wounds it may have caused for some people are worse than the benefit of the highs it's caused for some people. But what came to mind when you were saying this, two things. One is sort of like, I think as an audience, and particularly for you as someone who podcasts about things on the show, I know I feel this way with the challenge, right? Like, Survivor holds up a mirror to us. And, you know, when I, almost 6 years ago to the, like, we're 3 weeks out from 6 years ago, it being 6 years, when you asked me if I wanted to host a podcast with a stranger. Mm-hmm. And I did not realize that I was, like, signing up to talk about all of the things that happen on the challenge. I mean, for what a great show it is, there's a lot of issues that come up. Mm-hmm. Far from Bryce. Issues. This is a lot. And you have felt that 3,000 times more, I'm sure, mm-hmm. especially recently, but in general. And we as listeners and as viewers have confronted things that maybe we don't want to confront day to day. And I think that that's good. Like, I think Survivor has caused a lot of problems or perpetuated a lot of problems, but has also, like, hopefully exposed people to think about things that they may not have thought about otherwise. From a player's perspective, I mean, that's the hope, right? That's the best case scenario from some certain things. From a player's perspective, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, people keep coming back. Mm-hmm. So and most people speak positively on their experience. Is that fair? I mean,
Most of the people we talk to speak positive of their experience. We tend to self-select a little bit of that. We don't tend to like really seek out the people that talk super negative about their experience.
So I feel like if we're going to keep watching and you're going to keep podcasting, then we have to believe that Survivor's done more good than it's done bad.
Yeah.
But I think it's a fair conversation. Survivor
has done bad. But I just wonder how many of people's, like, I don't think everybody goes
on
Survivor.
How many lives have been ruined? We want a body count.
I don't think that, like, there's a ton of people that's like, boy, I'm really struggling. I'm having all these problems. I go on Survivor, and now I've, like, now I have the answer to the problems that were bothering me.
Well, I'm going to throw you for a loop. Are you ready for me to bring up the interview Corinne Kaplan did with Brandon Hance?
Go for it.
Brandon Hance seems to be doing well.
Yeah.
I don't know if you did you see this?
I know that he has been doing interviews. Yeah.
So Corinne, you know, look, we're in dark times.
Yes.
Corinne posted that she did an interview with Brandon Hance, and I thought, why not waste my time?
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I can't speak to what's – I don't even want to try to speak to what else is happening or what's happening. I've not followed his story. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not claiming to be some defender, apologist, promoter, whatever, or detractor, but – he seems pretty fine. And he even like speaks about it like, I was a kid, I was young, this was bad, whatever.
Right.
So even the people who have had the roughest roads, I feel like have come out okay on the other side.
Okay. All right.
And don't ding that. I don't know. Maybe that's like a horrible great. Thing. Well, and like this people
is a,
have suffered.
This is a great segue to talk about something else that has been
a really hot
button issue today, because we heard from Jeff Probst last night about the future of Survivor. What is Survivor doing next? Season 41. We thought that it was going to be on Yadas for the time being, that I had been pitching like, hey, well, why don't we talk about, let's do a all like a, you know, Southwest cowboy frontier version of Survivor, if that's you know, if it's a possibility. We're not going to get back to Fiji, but Jeff seems like that Survivor is already one step ahead, because that the Survivor is still on track for the fall.
Let's talk about our 41st season, because normally we show you a cool promo. For obvious reasons, we haven't been able to shoot, but man, we have some fun ideas. We're always trying to explore and evolve the show and take chances, and we're going to do that, and we're committed to being on in the fall with our 41st season, which means you should apply.
Okay. All right. So all sounds good. Season 41, we should apply. We're committed to being on in the fall, but Jeff goes on.
Especially if you're young. I'm talking teenagers, 16, 17, 18, 19. Do it. Cool parents in a cool school. Who knows? It could happen.
Okay, hold on. What is Jeff saying here?
You're asking me?
Yeah, you can apply as young as 16, 17, 18. That part is self-explanatory. But then he says, cool parents and a cool school, it could happen.
So I think what he means is, if your parents say it's okay and your school is willing to still let you graduate, even if you take 2 months off, it could happen. That to me was pretty clear. Like, if your parents are chill and your school's like, we're virtual anyway, baby, then fine. But that's like the least of the problems of what he said in this, good exit. I want to know, Rob, from you, though, where does, quote, we are committed to having Survivor on in the fall rank on a scale of things like, let's say, from Nicole saying, yes, she'll marry you, to like finding out you're going to be a father?
I was pumped up. I was very excited. I was like, oh, this is very good news. I'm very happy to hear this news. So look, I didn't know, like, for me, you know, Survivor is very like tight lipped about what they're thinking about things. So I didn't know if Survivor was sort of thinking like, hey, like, oh, well, we gotta wait. We're going to, you know, it's Fiji or bust, and we're only going to do, you know, so like it could be, you know, 2 years. And if that's how long it takes, that's how long it takes. So I was happy to hear that they are working towards figuring out a season for the fall. So it was exciting news to me.
Yeah. I was jazzed. I'm not going to lie to you, but I do hope, I should say I trust, but I hope that you know, they're not just like filming in a state that has very lax laws or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been standing you saying this since the beginning, privately in the comforts of my own studio. I don't think I've tweeted about it, but every time you've pitched Survivor, Frontier, or Cowboy, or whatever, yeah. I think it's a fabulous idea. I think even if we're not in this situation, I think it's a great idea. Shake it up. Like, that would be fun. I would still be here for it 100%. I think he indicates that it's not going to be the traditional season, obviously, because he's saying, like, we take chances, we explore, we're going to do something weird, but we'll be here. I'm mm-hmm. excited for that. I just hope it doesn't come down to, like, a moral dilemma for me of, like, can I actually watch this show when they just, like, filmed in a state that's, like, ignoring coronavirus? But if that doesn't happen, then I'm on board.
Yeah, we have to, you know, operate under the assumption that they're going to be, you know, as responsible as humanly possible with, you know, a big multi-million production, you know, like they're doing. But the weird thing is that the idea of people as young as 16 on Survivor, I mean, I thought that they were getting away from this. You know, I thought that they had like, okay, a couple of people like, you know, Jessica Pete, who was like a non-factor. They haven't even had a 19-year-old on in a couple of seasons.
Yeah, I truly, when I saw this, thought this is one of their plans, is like, have people who are lower risk. Like, I know that sounds crazy, but and someone posted that they're casting for 43, so maybe they already have a cast in mind for 41. Presumably mm-hmm. they would have already, because
yeah.
they were supposed to have filmed. So maybe this has nothing to do yeah. with it.
Can I ask you, is this sort of like international Major League Baseball, where we're signing people like 16-year-olds, and then that we're gonna get these people early before they have something else going on in their lives?
I ask why. Like, why do you need to do? I mean, well, I agree with the people who come out and criticize this. I think I'm not interested in seeing a 16-year-old on Survivor, and I don't think it's like a healthy thing for them to experience. Like, Shane's interview that you did earlier, which was fabulous, came to mind, that like his son was 12 or something. Mm-hmm. He was like, yeah. effed him up. Like, I don't think it's like smart. I don't think it's good TV to have a 16-year-old playing this game. I don't think they have good odds of winning. So my first thought was just like, it's going to be if they're going to do something during these times, it's going to be a younger cast, because it would almost be like irresponsible to have someone in like a higher risk factor group, although they don't normally do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, are they trying to get 16-year-olds to apply?
So you think it could be potentially an entire cast of like teenagers?
Oh, I would be so not excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, would you be interested in that?
No,
I mean, we'd watch it regardless.
Not at all. No.
Yeah. I loved Endurance. I was a big Endurance fan.
Yeah. My first thought, Allie, was that, are they going to have, like, families together?
Why? Like a tribe of, like, what, a 16-year-old, a 20-year-old, and their two parents?
Maybe. Maybe, like, you know, parents and kids. I feel like that Jeff, who, you know, talks a lot about being a parent, I think that his kids are, I think, of a similar age. So maybe that's just, like, top of mind, like the Winners at War theme song.
I'll say this. It feels like the wrong direction to me.
Mm-hmm.
But... because also, then you're getting into a point, I'm just too focused on this age and risk factor thing. Granted, everyone of any age should be staying inside quarantine wearing a mask, regardless of your risk factor. But if you're getting to the point where you have 19, 20-year-old kids, you're getting up in age for the parents. So, I don't know. Is it possible? Sure. I'd be more interested in a blood versus water with one parent and one kid than, like, full families going together. I mean... one of the worst seasons of the challenge was the most recent battle of the seasons. Mm-hmm. It's like four people from the same season. I don't want to see families fighting. Like,
okay.
Save it. I fight with my own family.
Randy Newpool wants to know, should any of these winners go to the challenge?
Then who? Yeah, I mean, 100%. Akiva and I have talked about this, but like, and he talked about it on Twitch, but like, Natalie Anderson, come on down. Like, we need her so desperately on the challenge. She would be such a fit. and she would crush 100%.
I think she could use something like that to get over that. In talking with her, I definitely could sense, you know, how down she was about. She really seems like she's beating herself up over. If I would have just made the fire against Tony, then taken him out, and Tony wasn't even that good at making the fire, then she would have been the winner of the season. And you know, in the people that I talked to, like, I definitely, you know, she seemed the saddest of anybody that I talked to, which is kind of weird because she was the first boot. Like, she went from being out to being all the way back, but I guess being so close that she feels like it slipped through her fingers.
If you put yourself in fire and you lose, you will never forgive yourself. Like, almost worse than not putting yourself in fire and losing. Like, yeah. I just, if you take off the necklace, if you Eric Reichen back it, like, and you lose, that's it for you. You know, like, I guess it's like you have nothing to lose because you wouldn't have won anyway, but I don't think that was clear, and I don't think it was clear that she would have won if she beat him. So I totally understand beating yourself up. I will beat myself up for things I said on this podcast, much less if I were on a TV show. So yeah. I wish her peace in this experience because I think she was sort of damned if she does, damned if she doesn't, and she crushed it and had she's the best first boot. I mean, I know you haven't officially said that maybe, but like she has to be. And so I think shook him around. But if she wants to work that out on the challenge, I would be thrilled to have her there.
Yeah, be exciting. And boy, what a multi-show star she would be between The Amazing Race, Survivor, The Challenge. She's done it all.
I mean, I'm here for it. I think it's interesting because I feel like MTV tends to discover the undiscovered of not that Bailey and Swaggy were undiscovered, but like once they take them out of the CBS reality show and put them on MTV, it's very interesting how you tend to like forget their CBS persona and they move into a different like echelon. Like Pauly, and you've seen him on a couple episodes of The Challenge, I feel like is a totally different person than he was on he's certainly staying crushing it. But so I would be thrilled for Natalie to make that leap. But I do wonder, I feel like once they make the leap to MTV, that's like a sign that CBS is done with them. But maybe
it's all Viacom. I think it's a different ballgame now.
Yeah, but I almost feel like it's different. I'd be curious to know how they perceive the branding. Like, is Jay going to... I don't know that... Did they want Jay back on Survivor? I'm not really sure. I feel like the Big Brother people tend to be the people they're not going to have back.
Well, I think that they do want Jay back on Survivor, but there has not been a theme, unless they were going to bring him back on Game Changers, there hasn't really been a spot for him to come back on where that, you know, they had David Wright from his season on The Edge of Extinction. And other than that, we've had new player seasons.
But then it's a good winners. Question because I think there's more money to be made on The Challenge.
Sure. Sure. So why should Jay sit around and wait for Survivor to call him? You know, if they're going to use Jay on Survivor 50, maybe. I mean, who knows? We might have like, you know, six Jay archetypes between now and then.
Well, I don't know anything, but don't you think that in order for him to be on the MTV stuff he started to be on, that was like a consent from CBS? I don't know. I would just imagine that like, I take it to mean like a sign that they've moved on from whatever show on CBS that they came from, and that was like a willing delivery.
And if they want Jay back, they'll look the other way. And if I was Natalie and I had that opportunity, I think I would definitely do it because I don't think that they're going to be doing another season with the Survivor winners anytime soon. So I would say that if they come calling, answer the phone.
Well, for anyone who doesn't watch The Challenge, and Brian Cohen, my co-host, tweeted something similar about this, but, like, The Challenge once you get cast on The Challenge, if you make a good enough name for yourself, that's, like, 10 years of work locked in. You know, like, The Challenge offers what Survivor in the early seasons used to offer, is that, like, maybe you'll be famous or you'll, like, co-host The View or whatever. Like, The Challenge now is a career move.
Yeah.
It's not just, like, a one-time deal.
Yep. Allie, all right, I got to get ready to talk to Taryn and look at the legacy watch on Taryn's Survivor update. Any other thoughts that you have about Survivor 40?
Well, my question is, did people not call in with voicemails? Or because we got no voicemails.
Well, we played voicemails.
We played one voicemail.
Yeah.
I'm not asking for more. I want to know if it's personal.
It's no, it's me. Not. It's not personal.
Did we not get any voicemails
for
this show?
Oh, we got them. We got them. I mean, that.
So what happens?
A lot of, well, sometimes that they people call in with questions and things that either it's not a great question or it's things that we already have talked about in, you know, in different podcasts.
Speaking of surprises, I'm surprised we got no voicemails.
Yeah. Here, you want to hear some?
You have to go. Here's a voicemail. Past our time.
Hey, Rob and Allie, it's Kellen B. And no, not Kellen Bechtold. Long-time listener, first-time caller, and I wanted to ask you guys about Michelle. I think Natalie obviously helped Michelle get to the end of the game, but I think by coming back from the edge at all, Natalie sort of doomed Michelle's chances of winning, because I actually think if Michelle had been in the final three with Sarah and Tony and Natalie hadn't been there for whatever reason, I think Michelle had a chance of getting up to 8 votes, possibly more. So there are 4 votes for Natalie, including people like Jeremy and Harvey.
All right, that's an insane take. Sure, that's fine. Okay.
You want okay? Let's how about another one?
No, okay? I didn't mean to say anything about Kellen. I just know you have to go, so I jumped in to stop the voicemail.
Okay, here. This is one that we can answer. This is a question from Tony.
Is Sophie okay?
Okay.
I want to know. That's a critical voicemail. Is Sophie okay? I'm not sure.
We don't know. We haven't heard from her. She's not on Twitter.
I believe I said that on this podcast.
Here's a question from Wave.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Allie. This is Wave from Florida, and I'm here to ask for your help solving the mystery of Sophie's fire tokens. So she earned 2 tokens when she beasted the coconut challenge a few weeks ago, and that should have been enough for 1 challenge advantage. But she was conspicuously absent during last week's egg segment. And in this week's battle back, it was very clear she had to start from the beginning with no advantages whatsoever. What the heck happened to Sophie's tokens? Is it possible there was a strategic advantage she spent them on, but ultimately it had no game impact? Did she spend 1 or both tokens on food along the way? Did the Survivor Devil make off of Sophie's tokens, travel back in time, and use them to fill Adam Klein's torch hole? Looking forward to hearing your theories.
Well, Allie, you
did you think about
theories?
This? What happened to Sophie's fire tokens?
You wouldn't have heard our theories unless I demanded justice for the voicemail callers. So you're welcome. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, honestly, we talked about this, you've talked about this. Like, it became so impossible to track the fire tokens. This brings me to something I did want to discuss, actually. How much longer can I stall you from Taryn? I don't understand, and forgive me if this has been talked about in the many Survivor podcasts we've done this season that have been fabulous quarantine distractions. Why were the advantage items not an auction?
So whoever bid the most fire tokens got them?
Yeah, I want to see, and I meant this at both stages, the first challenge, the second challenge. Like, it should not just be if you have it, you get it. It should be who's willing to spend. Okay, so maybe Natalie's going to spend the most, but maybe you don't want to because you want to reserve for the idol. So, like, you actually have a choice to make in your mind between how many advantages you want in the challenge, or am I the person who's going to win the challenge regardless? Like, Wendell came pretty close, and I'm going to buy an idol. Like, that's what I would have been interested in. Only one person gets each advantage, and only one person gets an idol, and they bid it out with fire tokens.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I like that idea.
I think Sophie probably bought food. I mean, it seems like the edge really sucked.
Well, I wonder, did she buy something that like didn't agree with her? Did Sophie perhaps eat, you know, 4,000 calories worth of peanut butter and then have a reaction that did not agree? Or, you know, I think that also...
Some distress.
Yeah, you know, I haven't watched the Ponderosa videos yet. I'll watch them before the next Survivor podcast over the weekend. But I wonder if maybe, you know, it has to do with, did she over consume when she got to Ponderosa?
Your guess is as good as mine on that one.
I don't know.
Who can speculate on whether or not she had some gastrointestinal distress?
Yeah, you know. Look, and it could be, you know, too much to drink also. That's also a possibility.
It's none of your business.
None of your... Look, I don't know. Who knows? Who knows what goes on at Ponderosa?
People get sick, Rob, at no fault of their own. You know, when you're starving on an island, I don't know if you've heard of it, maybe you get sick because, you know, you're dying because you haven't eaten anything.
That's a good point. I didn't think of it that way. Okay. Allie Lasher, Survivor Winners at War. Any other thoughts?
I have 5 pages of notes that I didn't even scratch the surface on because I still feel like this has just been 10 minutes. The time has flown by.
It did go by very quickly.
I don't understand why you let me do this. For 6 years now, you've let me do this, and it is an absolute joy, and I really do appreciate the opportunity to come talk to you about this show that I love, and I did not think I would be talking about Survivor with you about season 40, but I'm so glad that I was wrong about that, and so many things about this season,
yeah,
including the winner.
Well, this was really great to get to catch up and get all of your takes about the finale. Of course, that you can listen to Allie Lasher with Brian Cohen on the MTV Challenge wrap up. And I hear it's a great season of the challenge.
Are you ready for this, Rob? We have a guest tomorrow. So I bumped my own
Stephen
podcast
Fishback?
For this one. We don't have Stephen Fishback. We have... truly, honestly, a bucket list guest. Like, I actually don't solicit guests often because I don't love 3-person podcasts, but I heard this person speak to you recently, and he mentioned the challenge, and you know that I love this person. I tweeted at them, which I never do to anyone usually, and we have secured Bryce Isaiah,
wow,
the Purple Pants badass, baby boy, to be on with us tomorrow to talk about what is an incredible episode of The Challenge. I am besides myself. I think the podcast is going to end after this. It's going to self-destruct. Like, I can't do any more podcasts after break. I never truly, I have several bucket list situations, right? Like, I remember when you first asked me to do voicemails, I almost said no, because I remember being in my parents' house and being like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, my heart was pounding. I couldn't do it, but I was like, I have to say yes to this. Mm-hmm. And like, if I fail, I fail. And just, there's been certain moments through the last 6 years where I can't believe I've gotten these opportunities. Bryce was like, oh, maybe I'll do a podcast with Bryce. I would like lose it. Then I was on Family Feud with Renap and I was like, oh my God, I was on with Bryce. And now Bryce is going to be on my podcast. I really couldn't be more thrilled. I'm so happy about it. It's going to be great. So definitely check that one out. And then delete your app, like delete your account, whatever.
That's
but
it?
Only listen to that one.
That's it. Okay. All right. Well, check that out. That's going to be coming this weekend on the Rehap Ups feed. I am also going to have a new episode of Robin Akiva Need a Podcast, where we're going to find a third wheel. But breaking news, Allie Lasher is not a fan of 3-people podcasts. So... I don't know if we're going to be getting the like in the Facebook group this weekend on that one. And then I will be back with on another 3-person podcast with Jordan Kalish and Kellen Bechtold this weekend for This Week in Survivor.
To be clear, I'm a fan of listening to 3-person podcasts.
Oh, you're not a fan of being on 3-person podcasts.
You don't always get to say everything you want to say.
Okay.
3 people.
So you are voting that Robin Akiva should not have a third wheel?
I was voting that from the beginning. I think it's a terrible idea. That said, I'll be dutifully listening to it.
Okay. All right.
And Cosmo Quizzes was great with Liana, the ultimate third wheel, so I'm here for it.
Oh, good. I tried to tell the First Lady of Podcasting about all of the findings that we learned from the Cosmo Quizzes. She was not particularly interested.
Well,
go figure.
What,
par for the course.
Yeah, she bad girl. Did she think you were bad girl hot?
No,
girl
she was
hot,
like, she was like, I knew you. You're not a bad girl.
That was the best though. Is I was truly belly laughing when Akiva was like, I think I'm good girl hot, and you were like, I'm bad girl hot. I think just
yeah,
saying you're bad girl hot makes you bad girl hot. Rob.
Oh, okay, good. Well, I appreciate that. Very happy. Maybe no, they should not get Survivor involved with this at all. Allie, and then of course we got the final wand off as well on Monday with Josh Wiggler. So a lot still to do.
I'll believe it when I see it that it's the final Wanda.
Okay.
I'm thrilled at the potential that it's not.
Okay.
Where are we at with that?
Well, we'll see. I think we're going to potentially do some wand-offs this summer. I'm not sure if Survivor 41 stays on schedule, if we will have a weekly wand-off for Survivor 41. It really depends a lot on Josh Wiggler.
So you're saying that Josh is not committed to having the wand-off in the fall?
Yes, he is not committed to a season 41 wand-off.
Josh can do no wrong. If he blesses you with the wand off, he blesses you with the wand off.
We'll
and
see.
That's all you can really say.
We'll see with everything with that. There was something else that I wanted to ask you, and now I can't remember what it was.
Well, I'm not on Cameo, but you can follow me at Lash Tweets.
Yes.
If you want. Was that the question?
No, I feel like it was an important thing, and maybe it had to do with Josh Wiggler, and I can't remember what it was. Oh, yes, I remember. It had to do with Mike Bloom. I wanted to know, did you have any ideas for Mike Bloom's Survivor tattoo?
Funny you should say that. Flips pages. Why, yes, I do. My question about this, first of all, love the idea. Shout out to Mike Bloom. Do we have an update? Are we at 23,000?
Oh, yeah. We are not just at 23,000. That we have actually passed $25,000 raised for directrelief.org, providing PPE for doctors and nurses since April 1st to the end of the Survivor season, which includes, hold on, let me just do some math, that there was $13,960 raised in the GoFundMe that was created. So that was really incredible from the patrons of Rob's podcast. So $13,960 raised on the GoFundMe. And then between the new patron contributions and my matching pledge, we raised over $11,000. So incredible work by everybody. And so Mike Bloom's tattoo has been greenlit.
Not to be all Stephen Fishback, but like it's truly amazing that you're doing this. And, you know, if I could become a patron again, I would, so that you could match my donation, my pitiful donation, honestly.
You could delete.
Are you laughing?
Delete.
I am a patron. You could
delete.
Are you aware of this?
You could delete it and then come back.
You've earned to not have to match again my very minimal donation, my very minimal patron membership.
Yes.
Okay. What I love about Mike Bloom, I have to say, is that he sets the lowest bar for himself. And I just think that's adorable. It's relatable. Like, I remember listening to that podcast, and he's like, oh, you're at 21 now? Okay. So, and I expected him to go to, like, 30. Mm-hmm. For 30,000, I'll get this tattoo. And he's like, for 23,000. Because it's not, and yes, I'm sure he was already been thinking about getting a Survivor tattoo, whatever. Like, he could have said 30. And it's just so adorably Mike Bloom that he was like, for $2,000 more, I will permanently impact my body.
We did it.
can it be, is a Survivor tattoo an RHAP tattoo? Is that in the umbrella?
Wow, that's like our nightmares dreams. Is an RHAP tattoo a Survivor tattoo? I would say not necessarily. Jessica Lease has an RHAP tattoo. I would not say it's a Survivor tattoo.
But it's a Survivor podcast, so isn't it under the Survivor umbrella? Hmm. Would you say RHAP is under the Survivor umbrella?
It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I guess there are people that might listen to the Big Brother podcast and not like Survivor. I think that there are some of those people.
Is there a world where Mike Bloom gets a Survivor tattoo if he's not involved in RHAP? I would say no.
Probably not, but
that's a no.
You know, Mr. X does love Survivor.
Funny you should say Mr. X, because my idea is that he inks the original email as Mr. X that he sent to you on wherever he wants. that's my submission.
Wow. Okay.
It's kind of boring. Mr. X email.
I think
how
that
is
he
that
should,
boring? It's incredible.
He should take that email and blow up the font and make it into a series of tweets and then maybe get that turned into a tattoo.
Yeah, well, we can't all be Boston Rob. I was toying between like a beautiful collage of like the Popeye's chicken sandwich, the Mr. X email, Mixmaster Mike.
Like the Boston Rob backdrop at his house of the 2004 Red Sox?
Let's talk about that. Because how were Amber and Rob
in
front of the same backdrop if this was live?
Yeah. No, that
you
was...
You tell me!
I looked at the freeze frame also. I'm like, wait, hold on. How do Rob and Amber have the same background? Unless that Amber has a Zoom background. That's the same picture that Rob is standing in front of.
You tell me what's more likely. that or that this was previously recorded.
Or Robin
recorded.
Abraham Zoom backgrounds, yeah.
Also, what file cabinet is Ethan standing in front of?
Yeah, I actually interviewed Ethan this morning for ET Canada. He has a bunch of like it's like a old like cartography like cabinet that he has like a bunch of shelves.
I mean, marry me, Ethan. Like, of course he has like a cartography shelf. What does that even mean? Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Ethan's on, everyone.
There's a lot of treasure in there.
I'm upset that you don't like my tattoo idea. I mean, okay, Ethan's on his face. How about that? Just right on his butt.
Okay, sure, I'm in.
What's your idea? Do you have an idea?
No, but my idea was the Brandt Steel.
Oh, no, the Brandt Steel has to happen. I'm submitting. I love the idea. Was it Josh's idea that's like Mike's picks versus
the heroes versus villains? Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. That is so amazing.
Okay, all right, look, this is the kind of content that we're coming up with right now.
I texted Mike and I was like, Rob's eyes lit up with dollar signs when you were like, I'm going to do this preseason coverage before we knew about that Survivor was coming on in the fall. The relief in your voice that Mike was offering like a month of content was like very
important. Oh, are we going to break up each episode? Like, are we going to do it like 13 weeks? Like the breakdown.
If Survivor,
David Bloomberg and Jessica are going to tell us why the Popeye's chicken sandwich lost.
Look, you could do worse. You could do worse.
Love a wand off every week.
Could Jessica Lease do like an Ink Master level coverage of like what, like someone sketches it out and
sure.
Like, this is what the problems were.
Sure. The B&B will be very meta.
Rob, tell me you couldn't fill the time with this. I'm here for
All
it.
All right. Let's, you know, keep a careful eye. Keep a careful eye.
I'll go on the Twitch for the tattoo week. This week in Mike Bloom history.
All right. Look, if they have to push back season 41, I think that's what we're going to do this fall.
I don't look forward to it, but I'll be here for you if you need me during that difficult time.
Okay. All right. Let me run. I'm at least 20 minutes late to be on Taryn's podcast, so let me wrap this up. But this was great fun. Thank you so much, Allie Lasher. Keep an eye out for everything else coming up this weekend, everybody. Take care. Have a good one. Bye.